Ron and Anian.
Where will car repair be in the next 2 to 5 years? Because it's coming quick. You can see it's changing really fast. You're going to have a computer screen in front of you within the next 3 years, and you're going to go, wow, what happened to the steering wheel?
Glory days.
The Car Doctor.
We're not going to own cars in the future. That's what it's going to come down to. My great-grandfather drove a 78 Buick LeSabre. My God, he was crazy. He owned that car. Could you imagine owning a car?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
There's a problem in California that's going to make its way here to the East Coast and throughout the rest of the country, because it always does. What happens in California wanders east, and it just becomes an issue for all of us. And you've got to be aware of it. In Sacramento County, this goes back to last July, as a matter of fact. In Sacramento County, they've passed a law, and the article starts off by Sacramento County says it's illegal to work on your own car in your own garage.
Yep.
I'll say that again. In Sacramento County, California, it's illegal to work on your own car in your own garage. And then the law goes on to break down and define the fact of, you know, minor auto repair. It's okay to maybe put wiper blades on but not change a flat. And you can't do anything out in the street. It's got to be in your driveway or in your garage. And there's all sorts of rules and regulations. And all of Sacramento County is like this. And you scratch your head and you say, how can that be? Isn't this America? Don't we have freedom of choice? Don't we have rights? Don't we have? But we don't. And this isn't a political conversation. And I could very much make this a political conversation. But I don't need to, because I can appeal to you on a much higher, broader level as to why this is wrong. And it's an asinine move on the folks at Sacramento County. I want to talk to you about my buddy Russell. Russell and I, we grew up together in North Jersey fixing cars. And, you know, we both came of age the same time, both 16, both young kids, you know, learning identity, learning who we were and what we were and what we were capable of. For us, it was cars. It clicked. You know, in a time period that probably isn't politically correct now because you can't talk about it or say it, there was basically three groups of kids. I don't know what they are today, but back then in the 70s, there were jocks, there were the nerds or the smart kids. I mean, that's what we called them, right? And the gearheads. I was a gearhead. It's what I was, you know, because smart kids weren't mechanics back then, all right, or so they thought. You know, it was, you're smart, you're going to college, you're good at sports, you can go to college and play football, and you're not so bright. You'll go be an auto mechanic. And that was the mindset. And that's the way it got broken down. And, you know, I lived it every day for 4 years of high school. I met Russell in my junior year of high school. He was in the next town over in Ramsey, New Jersey. And we started hanging out every day in his mom's garage or my mom's garage. And we were just working on cars. We were just taking things apart. And it was like this opportune meeting at the right time in the right place. And one of the things that we both learned from it is we learned survival skills. We learned procedure. We learned that when you do a water pump, you do radiator hoses. And when you do radiator hoses, you do coolant. And when you do coolant, you do a thermostat. There's a procedure and a process to fixing a car just like life. And you knew that when you went out on the road and you traveled. And back in those days, to go from New York to Boston as an 18-year-old kid, all right, which I did when I first started dating my soon-to-be wife, it was a big deal. You'd load up the car, you'd take your little toolbox, and you'd drive to Boston 400 miles away. And it might as well have been Mars, because it was, oh my God, I'm leaving North Jersey. But I've got my toolbox, and if anything happens to the car, and it did, you'd fix it on the side of the road, the Merritt Parkway, the Connecticut Turnpike, the Mass Pike, and you learned roads, and you learned how to read, and you learned how to read a map because you were out on your own, and you knew that if something happened, your survival skills kicked in, and you fixed your car. Well, in Sacramento County, they're not going to have any of that. They're going to be a county of dumbbells, as my Uncle Steve would say. All right, may he rest in peace. Because we're not promoting auto repair. We're not promoting critical thinking skills. And that's what my takeaway is from this. And that's what I have to say about that from the perspective of, yeah, I don't want to get into the politics of it, and it's Democrats, it's Republicans, it's whoever's in charge of the county. That's not what this is about. This is a much deeper, more painful problem where we're disrupting growth. We're disrupting the raising of a generation of kids. We're not teaching them or giving them the opportunity to grow, to learn survival skills, to learn how to pack a toolbox, to learn what to change when this breaks, you change this, this, and this, and that with it. To learn the responsibility and the pride of when the car breaks, you go out there and you fix it. You just don't call somebody and say, here, solve my problem for me. You see, Sacramento County thinks they're cleaning up the air because that's at the root of their law, as I read it. They're worried about environmental damage. But they're not looking at the damage that's being done to that generation of 16 to 30-year-old young people because they're telling them, hey, you don't need to do anything. We're going to do it for you. Just call somebody, let them fix your car, which, and I believe this to be true, too. In 1972, 73, 74, 5, 6, 7, in the early to mid-70s, cars were clearly more affordable. And, you know, you could work on them. And even though they're limited on what you could work on now, all right, the cost factor and all, at least you could work on them. And you can still work on them. There are things that can be done. But the way this law appears to be written, everything's against the law, within reason. And then we sat and we thought about it and we read the law and it said, first thought that came through my mind after kind of digesting this, I said, what happens to the kid who wants to build a hot rod? And, you know, nobody's going to do what I did. Nobody's going to take a 55 Chevy, tow it out of Jersey City, strip it clean, and work on it for 3 years and build a hot rod. That's where Black One came from. Nobody's going to do that in this day and age. I mean, it's rare. I guess maybe it happens. But who's going to take that O2 Mustang and modify it? You know, again, where's that creativity? Where's that teaching of so many processes and procedures and creating a generation of people that can think and do on their own? You see, that's the damage. And that's really what this is about, because maybe we don't want people that can think and do on their own. And maybe they don't care, but you have to. So I want you to do a couple of things, because I think there's power in what we do and what we choose. Maybe there's no hope for Sacramento County right now. You should Google it. Google Sacramento County, California auto repair law and read it and be aware of it. And, you know, look at it when it comes to you, when you see that little glimpse of information in the newspaper or out on the web, and it talks about auto repair laws being changed or what you can work on and what you can't. Just remember, it happened there. It could happen where you are. And that's a problem. And that's something you've got to really, really be aware of. And you know what? To this day, just for the record, I just saw Russell this week. Still fixing cars. I'm still fixing cars. He's in North Carolina now, and he came up for a visit, and we sat and we had lunch and we talked about the old days. And yeah, and you know, some bench racing went on, which is nothing wrong with that. It's a healthy side track and diversion. But you know what? We learned an awful lot, and we grew up awful fast, and we both turned out okay. So we're both still fixing cars, doing what we love. We don't work a day in our lives. We get to do what we enjoy. And you know what? I'm glad I grew up in the time period I could, where you could work on cars. Hello and welcome, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. We're here at 855-560-9900. We're going to pull over and take a pause. I've got Phil in Vermont and a few others on the phones right now. Let's everybody stay put. Let's go pull over, take a pause. When we come back, we'll open up the phones and get the garage doors going until they ban this show and tell me it's illegal. I'll be right back. Don't go away.
Call me, you can call me, Annie. for the best in car advice, give Ron a call, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's get over to Phil in Vermont, 09 Chevy Malibu, and some questions about exhaust manifold. Yes, Phil, how can I help?
Hi, Ron.
Yes, sir.
Glad to talk to you again. You've helped me out quite a bit on this car.
Thank you,
sir. First issue, I got two issues. Exhaust manifold, about 3 years ago, when I first got the car, it was cracked, so I ordered one from the local parts place, and that only lasted about 7 months, and that was a steel. The original one was cast iron, and the second one, the first one they sent me was steel, then that lasted a few months, then the next replacement one they sent me was cast iron, and now that's cracked again. It's been about 2.5 years.
Okay.
What could be causing that?
This is the four-cylinder?
Yes.
Okay. Likely, and I've been through this with the replacement exhaust manifolds, the aftermarket exhaust manifolds in this application don't necessarily hold up.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. So I would go
back
to...
Well, I was wondering, because it's a Dorman, and they're about $600, $700, and the GM one is like $1,300.
Right. Well, there's a reason. You know, there's a reason that $1,300 one. Look how long the first one lasted, right? The first one lasted, what, 6 years, 7 years? Longer,
right.
Actually, right?
Have you ever purchased the aftermarket ones?
I have not, because I have heard of this story over and over again, but I do know of shops that have done it, and they've had repeated failures with it, and they've had all sorts of issues. Now, sometimes, yes, it's how the manifold is hung how the exhaust system is hung, and that it's not mounted, or something, there's a broken hanger, or there's an extenuating circumstance. But I see and hear of a higher failure rate with the aftermarket exhaust manifolds on this application than I do versus the General Motors, the original equipment stuff. So I can't tell you that it's any one specific thing. I always come back to, in my mind, it's the product itself. It's whatever we're bolting on. So there, you know, cast iron is cast iron. What's it supporting? It usually cracks right in the webbing, correct? Down where it,
exactly,
right,
yeah.
right where it meets the pipe. So I've always felt that I just don't think it's thick enough. Listen, Dorman doesn't have any problems, according to them.
I talked to the rep on the phone. He wants me to send pictures before, right. I send it back for the.
Yeah, send it back. Cut it in half and send them. Show them the thickness. Either that, or I'd love to see somebody go to a junkyard, cut a GM one in half, and then cut the Dorman in half and see if the thickness is the same, or see what the mechanical differences are. I've got to tell you. One thing I've got to tell you about Dorman, and there's just. they do some stuff really well, and they do some stuff really bad. Is they're not very receptive to criticism. I had an issue. Mm-hmm. I had an issue, and this is a little off your subject. I'm sorry, I'm stealing your call. I had an issue with Taurus. Oh, like 02 through 09 Ford Taurus washer nozzle hoses. All right, where you would buy the hose version from Dorman, and it would last 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, maybe. It would fold and break just where the Ford piece broke, but the Ford piece lasted 7-8 years. And when I presented it to Dorman, no, we don't have any failures. Yet there were three guys standing around me in the meeting. It was at a regional trade show, and there were three guys standing around me after the technical meeting, and we've had that same problem. We were wondering it ourselves. We were listening to your conversation. Dorman's not really too receptive to we've got a problem, let's fix it. That just seems to be they're kind of like the Honda of the aftermarket. Honda never has any problems either, for the record. But that's
now.
Just,
how come when you get the replacement one, the warranty dates back to the first one? That doesn't seem fair.
What you mean when Dorman replaces one?
Yeah, because I'm on my third one. That's going to be coming in Monday now.
Well,
but the guy told me on the phone that the warranty dates back to the first one.
And right, what did they? Because that was your first purchase. Because it doesn't go on in perpetuity. It doesn't go on forever. So in other words, what's the warranty on it? 3 years?
No, it said limited lifetime warranty.
Okay, so then what difference does it matter what the date is?
Well, because the catalytic converter is hooked to it, and he said that's only warranted for 5 years.
Okay. Oh, so this is a manifold with a cat built in.
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Are there any misfire fault codes in this vehicle? Does the vehicle run okay?
runs beautiful. It just stinks because I think it's not burning the exhaust through the converter.
Well, okay, so let's back up. Is there a check engine light on? No, right?
Right.
Okay, so no check engine light. You know, and I guess in all fairness, I should consider that. You know, fuel trims could be out. There could be an issue. There could be an issue with the way the engine's running. But you would see, you know, it would either turn up a check engine light, a fault code, a problem in the way it runs, a stumble. All right. And all that can lead to it. But I've always come back to it's how that manifold is put together, that it's not done well in the aftermarket. And that's why GM gets the money they get. All right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. The other question I have real quick is, on the windshield wiper, the transmission arms, do you usually replace that whole arm deal, or have you ever replaced just the white bushings on it?
Well, first of all, the white bushings are going to come from Dorman, right?
Yep, they actually did. I just got some.
Yeah, so I would buy the whole assembly, because guess why? Same problem.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same problem.
And GM doesn't say that sell the replacement ones.
Right, that's right. GM sells you the whole assembly.
Which doesn't make much sense to me because they have to have them when they assemble them, so you'd think they'd have boxes of them.
Well, you'd think they'd have boxes of them, but there's probably an issue with cataloging, indexing, supplying, and storing them. So, you know, there's an awful lot that goes into parts availability. Here, I'll tell you a scenario. We had a Nissan, I can't remember what it was. It was an older Altima. Oh, it was probably like an 11 or a 12 Nissan Altima a couple of months back, and it broke the little white plastic bushings for the wiper transmission. So, yeah, I could have gotten link arms, and I could have gotten an aftermarket wiper transmission, but for $22 more, I was able to get a brand-new transmission wiper and linkage assembly right from Nissan, bolted it in and closed the hood, and the car's gone. And, mm-hmm. You know, There's value in buying certain OE parts, plain and simple. All right.
But and, now, in the beginning, though, when I went to purchase this, the price was like $600 or $700, and how would I have known that back then, 3 years ago? That
you wouldn't. So you know, it's a live and learn business. You know, Phil, when you walk into a repair shop. If you've got a relationship with the guy and you've got the right repair shop, and I think there's a couple of different kinds of repair shops out there, and you know, I know this from talking to guys. There are guys that won't use certain parts or parts manufacturers because they know what, you know, it's a problem, and they want their customers to be happy. And then there's guys that'll sit there and they'll say to me, "Yeah, I'll use the aftermarket part. Sure, it wears out in 2 years. I give a year's warranty on the labor. The customer gets the part for free, but at least they get the labor back." Everybody's got a different way of doing business. And, unfortunately, you won't know. So I wish I could do more for you, Phil. I feel your pain, brother. It's a live and learn business, and unfortunately, you're learning it right now. So keep going. You'll get there. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back, Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. You know, if Phil's still listening, what you have to remember, when you see an extreme price difference between an original manufacturer-supplied part and an aftermarket part, you've got to look at that and say, why? All right? Costs are costs. It's X number of dollars to make something versus this many dollars to make something. The fact that that manifold had a catalytic converter in it tells you that, well, as, you know, I like to think, aftermarket catalytic converters are just not going to last as long as an OE catalytic converter. Because if you look at them, they're always a little bit smaller. There's, you know, catalytic converter material has to come from the same source. And yeah, there's cases where the original equipment manufacturer is gouging and he's charging more for something on a large scale than it's worth. But in a lot of cases, you know, it's pretty close, and there's a gap that's closing every day, and you've got to look at OE parts versus aftermarket parts. There's a time and a place, and a lot of what you're buying in when you purchase parts is you're buying the expertise of that person behind the parts counter. Hey, what works? And you're also buying the expertise of that guy in the repair shop. Hey, what works? And that's very important as part of the process today. If you're blindly buying parts on Amazon and there's nobody to ask. Or at my favorite place, Rock Auto, because I look at that and I say, you know, that's a whole nother story. You know, you get what you get. You're taking a pick and a poke, and you're you know, you've got nobody to go back to and resource and source, and you know, having a reference to speak to somebody knowledgeable, reliable, and responsible. That's a huge part of the repair process today, as it has been for many, many years. Let's get over to Mike in Virginia. Some Jeep Grand Cherokee issues. Hey, Mike, what's going on? Are these, what is this, 95 and 97? Are they both 4.0s?
No, they're the Hemis.
Okay.
And basically what happens is as you could be coasting along, and then you take your foot off the gas, so you get it down to, you know, 1,500 RPM or so. You give it the gas, and it kind of like almost, someone says, like lean misfire, or it kind of chugs and has difficulty moving up hills. Now, everything I've read online, which I know isn't always true,
right?
They say it has to do with this MSD system or MDS system or whatever it is, and that's been a constant problem for Jeep. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what the deal is. I mean, I put new plugs in it, Champion Copper, just like they say, and new wires in both of them. It runs a heck of a lot better, but it didn't fix the problem.
Right, and so these aren't 95 and 97. This is 05 and 07.
05 and 07, sorry.
Yeah. Okay,
sorry.
That's all right. I'm sitting there, I'm thinking about Hemis in 95 and 97.
05 and 07,
yeah,
sorry.
That's a little different. So let's talk about this again. This is a misfire that occurs when? Start over again?
Okay, as you're cruising along, you let your foot off the gas, so it's no load. Then you give it a little bit of load. Okay, you don't floor it. You just give it some gas. And it kind of like, you know, it's hard to describe it. It has like a jump to it, a misfire. It kind of has, it struggles.
It's as if you were accelerating lightly, like there was an egg between your foot and the gas pedal, and you just sort of wanted to...
Right, just give it a little bit of gas.
Just give it a little bit of gas, and there's a little bit of a cough and a wheeze. Almost, is it anything like a stick vehicle being driven in too low of a gear and you step back on the gas again to accelerate?
Yep. Kind of okay. Like that in a way.
All
yeah,
right.
Could be.
How many miles are on these vehicles?
One's got 170, one's got 190.
Okay. And there's no fault codes?
No fault codes, no.
All right. And everything you do seems to make them a little bit better, but nothing fixes it.
No, okay. Nothing yet. And again, they were saying it has to do with this MDS system. You know, it runs four cylinders out of
right.
the eight.
Right.
And that's not, you know, it's been a fault of Jeep or something, and they don't want to fix it. I mean, that's just what I've been hearing.
Well, and I'll tell you a few things, and I'll tell you what it probably is, and you won't like it. So get ready, brother.
Yeah, well, it's probably not the camshaft.
No,
I mean, I've read that.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's. But well, here.
But,
so you know, you got to go through the obvious, right? It's if the engine was misfiring and it was that sensitive, all right, or if it was that obvious, it's sensitive enough that you should see some misfire faults developing. Not necessarily
right.
ignition, just misfire faults. All right. Obviously, I would tell somebody to go in and look at fuel trim, look for pending fault codes. What do they see looking at data stream? Does anything look like it's out of kilter? All right. And, you know, that's just plain and simple obvious. Do we have the beginning of an injector fault? Injector issues on these engines are not uncommon. Carbon deposits on these engines are not uncommon. Obviously, and I know you're a regular to the show, you know, fuel injection cleaning, carbon removal, all important parts of automotive maintenance today, right? So let's rule out the engine for a minute. You know, you can get off the phone and go look and do carbon cleaning and go through all the things I've told you and, you know,
sure,
but I don't think that's where you're going to find the solution. I'm willing to bet this has an issue in the transmission. Trans is original?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And also, I want to mention, too, you know, any software updates that need to be done should have been done. All right, because
right.
Chrysler's had their issues with reprogramming for this, where they, you know, they're trying different flashes and different solutions and, you know, different types of software changes to make them run better. I don't think any of that's going to do it. What you're describing to me is what I typically see on, you know, that generation, 2003 up through about 2011, Jeep product, Dodge, Chrysler. Rear-wheel drive SUV-type vehicle. It's probably got... Do these have the NAG transmission, the NAG one?
They have, I don't know, Quadra Track or whatever. I'm not sure, you know.
Okay. So these have an issue where these are six speeds, right? One of them is a six speed.
I believe so.
So what Chrysler's doing around this generation is they don't apply the converter. They don't lock up the converter in the transmission in first gear, but they do in second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And what you're describing is the beginnings of the converter coming on too quickly or too harshly at the wrong moment. It's almost like if they delayed converter lockup because it shifts from first to second. You take your foot off the gas, all right? Converter releases, and then you just touch the gas and bang, it comes right back on too harsh. It's like it needs a half a second delay to get the vehicle moving before it locks the converter, because what it's doing is it's pulling the RPM down so low, it causes the engine to lug. Is the problem better? How can I say this? Is the problem less noticeable the faster you're going? Like, it's worse in second and third.
If you're going fast, you don't notice anything.
Right.
If you're going fast, you won't notice anything.
Right.
You know?
It's really noticeable in second and third. But
under load, like you could be in first going to second.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. It doesn't happen in first. It's like second, third, maybe fourth, but not fifth or sixth. Right.
Right.
I think you got a trans issue, brother. Now.
Yeah, they both have the same thing. And then what I've also read is, like, if you put it in tow and haul mode, it gets rid of the overdrive. Now it runs better that way, because then you're not using the MDS system. You're running on all eight then when you're towing and hauling.
Yeah, and guess what?
So it seems to run better that way.
But. And I don't believe you're locking the converter in the same manner. So we're back to transmission again.
All right. It's weird. They both have the same thing though. But anyway.
Yeah. So just stop and think about that. What you may try to do is try double footing it. Try drive with your foot lightly on the brake pedal.
Right.
All right, because that should release the converter, and I'd have to read and research that to verify, but I'm pretty sure it does, and that will release or not allow the converter to be applied up to a certain point, and if that improves the way the vehicle operates, then at least you know you've got to get into the trans. Now, before I let you go, real quick, trans fluid ever changed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right, so, you know, and just...
I'm anal about that. I change it every 50,000.
Good man. All right.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, and you may find, if you do believe that this comes down to where this is a trans issue, there are some additives out there, some friction modifiers. And I don't like the Band-Aid things, but, you know, you get to the point where at 170, 180,000, you're not going to take the trans apart to put a converter in it, or you're going to put a trans in it. And if it is a NAG trans, which I believe it is, there goes $4,500 out the door.
So
sometimes that friction modifier is worth the gamble, but, you know, I think what you're describing to me is a trans issue. And obviously, you got to go in and look at the numbers, you know, look at fuel trim, look at some of the counts, look at some of the pending faults, you know, but yeah, don't rule out transmission for a problem like that you're describing to me. All right, kiddo?
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. You take good care. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. You know, the other day I was in the shop and I heard that song, and I'm turning around and I went, hey, Ron, it's weird how you listen to music and it's bumper music and you go, wow, where's the microphone? Dennis in Virginia, how can I help you today? Dennis, what's going on?
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
I'm calling you to get your opinion, Ron. I've been in a Honda Civic for 3 or 4 years, and I'm tired of pouring myself into it, trying to pull myself out of it.
Right.
I'm a bigger fella. And wanted to get something a little more accessible.
Okay.
Thinking about like an SUV that would set up a little taller. And I was looking at this Nissan Rogue. I want to get a used one, something 2014, 2016, with, you know, 40 to 60,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And I was just wanting to pick your brain just a little bit to see if there's any issues with this Rogue in that 2014, 2016 range.
They had some trans issues early on, and I believe they're resolved by then. But everything has issues, Dennis. All right? I don't think there's anything out there in the marketplace you're going to buy today that's, you know, isn't going to have one or two bugaboos that have to be dealt with. What's probably the most important thing to consider when you're buying a vehicle is who's going to work on it.
Right.
And so I turn to you and I say, Dennis, who's going to work on this Nissan? Do you have a regular mechanic that you've been going to for years and years? You know, do you have a trusted guy? Or you?
Yeah, for the last 2 or 3 years, yes.
Okay. So, you know, you got to ask him the question, hey, I'm thinking about buying a Nissan Rogue. Can you work on it? And do you have a scan tool that will communicate with it at a fairly competent level? And I think that's, you know, some of the key questions you have to ask. And if he kind of hems and haws and stamps his feet, you know, as good a mechanic as he can be, he's limited by his tool choices.
Right.
You know, it comes down to, and when I say a scan tool choice, it can't be, yes, I've got a Snap-on scan tool. You know what? Snap-on's a good tool. It's not the be-all and end-all. A good repair shop today has multiple aftermarket scan tools, a Snap-on, a Launch, an Autel, all right? And then they've got, you know, multiple dealer-level tools. They've got a Ford IDS. They've got, you know, a GM Tech 2 or the later model GM for the newer GMs. They've got, you know, the Chrysler tool, the StarScan, the DRB3 if it's older Chryslers and that type of thing. It's a dedication to tools. Because it's not a question of how smart are they. They're going to be locked out electronically where they can't. And that's important for you, the consumer. And then, you know, as long as we're talking about it, so go look at a Rogue. You have to sit in a bunch of things, all right? How old's the Civic? How long have you had the Civic?
It's a 2012, and it's got 78,000 on it. So it's a great little car.
Great little car, see? But it's sort of like dating, right? You've been dating this Civic for 8 years. It's time to go out and test the waters and see what the market is, all right? So, you know, you don't want to fall in love with the first car you get in, all right? You want to go drive a Rogue. Go sit in a Ford Explorer. I think Ford Explorers are great cars, and you'll find stuff out there certified pre-owned. Go sit in a Chevy Tahoe. You know, they're all like, you know, we're all in that same midsize category. Go look
right.
at a, go sit in a Toyota, not a RAV, the one up, or the 4Runner, all right?
Yes. And
see what those do for you. And just as important, back to your mechanic. Hey, I'm thinking of XYZ. Can you work on it? What's your area of expertise? And you know, that's just really important. I had somebody at the gym ask me the other day, hey, can I bring you my Mercedes? And I explained to him, you know, and it was an 18 Mercedes ML something or other. And I said, no, because the scan tool only goes up to X, you know, and you really need a guy that's got scan tool capability. It's just that important. It's not a reflection of intelligence. It's a reflection of tool choices and business decisions that the shop is making or where they're at in the scan tool evolution, because that's really what's limiting the repair. All right, kiddo?
One more quick question.
Well, tell you what, Dennis, sit right where you are. Let me pull over, take the pause. When we come back, we'll finish up. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Running into the Car Doctor. Dennis, you're still there. You had one more question, sir, quickly. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Does cold weather decrease the miles per gallon in vehicles?
Does cold weather decrease your ability to work well as a human being?
Certainly.
All right, same thing. It's mechanical, okay. But it will affect it. Now, the idea is, all right, and, you know, they've gotten better over the years, all right? It used to be, if you're old enough, it sounds like we're sort of in the same age group or close to it, but I remember carbureted cars. The choke was on longer, and, you know, it ran a little richer, and, you know, cold weather would limit fuel economy, and, yeah, there's definitely some truth in that. I think computer cars have gotten better where it's not as pronounced, and they're trying to create a more stable, you know, fuel miles per gallon, emission levels over a wider range of temperature. But, yeah, it can. You know, and then it also depends on how it's taken care of. For example, all right, I still hear people say to me, I got into a conversation with a fellow this week. He wanted me to put 1030 oil in his Jeep because that's what I put in every Jeep since the day I've owned Jeeps since 1952. Well, you know, things have changed a little since 1952. And, you know, he wants me to put in a 1030 oil because that's what they should have. And it really called for a 020. And I forget the exact year make model. It was somewhere in the blur of the week that just went by. And I had to explain to him, you know, in cold weather, that creates more drag and that affects fuel economy, that affects emissions, that affects, you know, engine protection. It might even affect, depending upon how cold it is, if that engine will even start. It will be able to crank and turn over. So, you know, yes. And there's a lot of things that go into that configuration. And, you know, but great question. I appreciate it. Dennis, I hope I helped you. And good luck car shopping. Remember, don't fall in love with the first one. Go out and take a few out on a date and try them. It's Valentine's Day weekend here on The Car Doctor. It'll be a good time to do that. So good luck to you. I'm Ron Ananian and The Car Doctor, looking up, thinking it's time to go. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.